Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17, The Punishment and Reward of Kali, Text Number 7. Tvam Bhavrinala Dhavala. Padhel. Nunna padacharan Vrisha rupinna kim kaschid Devonna parikhidayan Tvam, you, va, ida, nillala, Rinala Davala, as white as a lotus, Padai, of three legs, Munna, being deprived, Pada, on one leg, Charan, moving, Brishab, bull, Rupinna, in the form of, Kim, weather, akaschit, someone, deva, demigod, naha, us, parikedayan, causing grief. Translation. Then he, Maharaj Parikit, asked the bull, "Oh, who are you? Are you a bull as white as a white lotus, or are you a demigod? You have lost three of your legs and are moving only on one. Are you some demigod causing us grief in the form of a bull?" Report by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. At least up to the time of Parikit Maharaj, no one could imagine the wretched conditions of the cow and the bull. Maharaj Parikit, therefore, was astonished to see such a horrible scene. He inquired whether the bull was not a demigod assuming such a wretched condition to indicate the future of the cow and the bull. I'll read the verse again. Tamba rinnala dhavalahap padeya nunnaha padacharan brisharupinna kim kaschit devonna parikhedayan. Then he, Maharaj Parikit, asked the bull, "Oh, who are you? Are you a bull as white as a white lotus, or are you a demigod? You have lost three of your legs and are moving on only one. Are you some demigod causing us grief in the form of a bull?" So here, in this part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Parikit, here in Sukadeva Goswami, Sudhika Goswami actually, is describing the events that happened after the Battle of Kurukshetra. He has described how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna himself, left this planet, and how his personal associates, the Pandavas and others, also retired from this world, and how they established Maharaj Parikit as a representative of Krishna, the Supreme Lord, to rule over the entire world. And Parikshit Maharaj heard that there was this incident of mistreatment of you know, the cow and the bull in his kingdom, and he heard, in fact, that actually Kali had infiltrated his kingdom. That was actually what he heard, and he set off with his on his chariot drawn by black horses, and surrounded by his army and his weapons, and he set off to conquer in all directions, to make sure that the principles of religion were being properly followed and that the influence of Kali would be curtailed. So then he came across this scene there was a sudra who was dressed in royal cloth and imitating a kshatriya or a ruler, who was beating a bull and the legs of a cow. And the bull, in fact, was standing on one leg. Three of his legs had been somewhat broken, and the bull was trembling and urinating. So it was a very, very horrible scene. And of course, in the time of Maharaj Parikshit, this is a scene that's just could not even be imagined. It's difficult for us to put into perspective how, shocking it would be for Maharaj Parikshit in those times when these things just didn't happen. It's something like, previously in New York, Prabhupada also mentioned this in one of his conversations, that there was sort of an underground culture where they would, eat the embryos of, unborn children. It's a statement which is, even in this day and age of Kali, it's so shocking that you just can't, quite fathom how horrible it is, So this is the sort of reaction that Parikshit Maharaj would have got at that. One who is, properly situated, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, they see that they do not see any difference between, a man of knowledge, a dog, a dog eater, an embryo eater, an outcast, an embryo, because they understand that within each living entity is a spirit soul who experiences a living entity who experiences the pains and distresses of material existence in a material body. Srila Prabhupada was explaining this point to one I think he was a member of Parliament. I think when he was in London, he was explaining at this point. And Srila Prabhupada said, I do not see any difference between you and a dog. So, when I heard him say, I was wondering how this member of Parliament would take that. But gradually Prabhupada brought him to that spiritual understanding. He was talking on the spiritual platform. You know, on the material platform, of course, we have to accommodate for the certain bodies that living entities, you know, exist in. just like is mentioned, Srila Prabhupada mentions that just because, you know, we don't discriminate between a tiger and a human doesn't mean that we go up and try and shake hands with the tiger, you know. So, you know, the discrimination is how we behave with them is there, you know, according to proper material circumstances, the body they have. But spiritually, there is no difference. And spiritually means that they are a living entity, you know, who is experiencing the suffering condition of being in a material body. You know, so... you know, and for devotees, of course, this is not a difficult thing for us to understand. It's an elementary truth for us. Whereas for materialists, they, you know, when they send, you know, cows or you know, other animals, you know, turkeys or what have you, to the slaughterhouse, they have no real perception of the suffering that they cause for those living entities. But Maharaj Parikit, you know, perceived this situation, you know, in the same way that one may see one's mother, you know, being beaten, or one's father. So he came across this situation, and he said to the you know, this bull, that you know, who are you? So you, are you a bull as white as a lotus, or are you a demigod? So previously we see that in the previous chapter there was a discussion, because Parikit Maharaj at once drew his sword and he was going to, you know, punish with death that sudra. Of course, that sudra gradually revealed himself that he wasn't a kshatriya, because instead of standing to fight, he immediately threw off his royal robes and, you know, and begged for mercy, you know, not to be killed. But Parikit Maharaj, in that position, ready to kill that Kali personified, he spoke to some consoling words, actually, to the bull. And he understood by his answers to his questions that, you know, there was a sense of God consciousness and, you know, a very wonderful, you know, sense of religious principles. And therefore he understood that he is, in fact, Dharma, or religion personified. So here, therefore, he's saying that, you know, you have lost your three legs and are moving on only one. Are you some demigod causing us grief in the form of a bull? That, you know, you're this, in this pastime you're performing, you are alerting us to the beginning of what, you know, we will see in the future on a regular basis. In that sense, Parikit Maharaj was correct in what he was saying. So this is significant, that you've lost your three legs and are moving on only one. So what is that one leg?
Yeah?
Truth. Truth, yeah. And, you know, which raises an interesting question, which... Satsarup Maharaj raises in this book, Truthfulness, the Last Leg of Religion. Anyone read that? Yeah, nice book. It's based on this chapter. chapter 17. Very nice. Cool. And, it's been out for many, many years. So 1989. He asked the question, and this microphone is sinking, I'm sort of an old man and an old microphone, both gradually sinking. Can someone just tighten that to me? If it was a young man, I would have noticed a lot earlier. That's good, thank you. So, he asked the question that, why is it that of all the four legs, which is of religion, represented by the bull, austerity, cleanliness, mercy or compassion, and truthfulness, why is it that truthfulness is the only one that remains in Kali Yuga? Because it's a good question, isn't it? Good question. In Satya Yuga, and Prigit Maharaj is also, understands this, that in Satya Yuga, all four legs, all four pillars of religion are firmly established. But as each yuga comes along, the next yuga, then one quarter of religious principles is removed. In fact, what happens, as explained by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, commenting on this section, that a quarter of each of the four principles is removed, and therefore, by the time you get to Kali Yuga, which is the fourth age, four quarters of austerity, mercy and cleanliness are all but gone, but there's a little bit more of a trace of truthfulness that is there in stronger proportion, to the point where religion can still stand. And what happens if we take away the last leg of the bull? Religion collapses. So truthfulness, therefore, is particularly important amongst the four qualities. And one of the things that Satsri Maharaj draws out of this chapter is Prabhupada's comments as to why truthfulness, that in fact truthfulness is the main supporting feature of religious principles. So I'll just read a couple of quotes. And here Srila Prabhupada defines truthfulness in this chapter in two terms. Now the first term is that, let's see, in the 32nd verse, so the 33rd verse in the purport describes that that 33rd verse gives a nice description of truth as it relates to religious principles. And in the purport it says, any place or country where the supremacy of the Lord is accepted and thus sacrifice is performed is called Brahmavata. There are different countries in different parts of the world, and each and every country may have different types of sacrifice to please the Supreme Lord, but the central point in pleasing him is ascertained in the Bhagavatam, and it is truthfulness. The basic principle of religion is truthfulness, and the ultimate goal of all religion is to satisfy the Lord. So that last sentence there, Prabhupada gives in the first definition of truthfulness, there are two aspects. That the basic principle of religion is truthfulness, and for a religious person, the ultimate goal of religion is to satisfy the Lord. So, truthfulness in this regard is understood as reality. What is truth? Truth is synonymous with that which is real. Not something that is false. So therefore, religion means a person has a sense of reality to the point where they understand that there is, acknowledge the supremacy of God, and they acknowledge that they are in a subordinate position, and therefore, the eternal servants of the Lord, and therefore, being the eternal servant of the Lord, their eternal function is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's a conception of reality is the basic principle of truth, always maintaining reality. And this is a very interesting topic. When Srila Prabhupada was here in Melbourne in 1975, somewhere around about this time of year, he was up in his room there, and he was discussing with some lawyers about truth and religion. Because what had happened was that some of the devotees, in those days, we didn't go to the markets to get flowers. They had other ways of acquiring the flowers. And, there may have been some festival or something. Of course, Prabhupada was here, so, that's a festival in itself. So they probably wanted more than the usual flowers. And, they'd spotted some nursery, full of wonderful flowers. And what happened was they got caught taking flowers. The boy, the devotee who actually got caught, wasn't the one who took them, and therefore Madhavisa Swami had a very good relationship with these lawyers. He got them to defend the devotee who got off. He was charged, but he got off because he wasn't the one who actually stole them. So in that sense, they all got off. But then, so he was sitting with the lawyers in Prabhupada's room having a discussion on, truth and what is wrong. And Prabhupada just kept stressing this point that ultimately everything belongs to God. And of course you can imagine the lawyers, were really struggling at this point. Prabhupada never, wavered from that point at all. No matter, and of course they kept pressing, yes, but, there are the laws of the state, and, they were giving so many examples. That one of the lawyers was saying that, Prabhupada was giving the example. He said, you've come into this room, you're sitting in one of the chairs. You sit there for a couple of hours, but because you sit there for some time, it doesn't mean that it's yours. And, it belonged, it didn't belong to you when you arrived, it won't belong to you when you leave, but you can use it while you're here. And he was saying that that's actually, the proper conception is that we all come into this world, everything belongs to God when we arrive here, we use it for some time, usually fight with each other over it, and then we leave with nothing. And so the lawyer was trying to explain the legal perspective that, yes, but if I happen to be sitting here and someone else comes in and says that, you know, I want to take that chair from you, then there becomes a legal dispute. But Srila Prabhupada's, you know, explained that, you know, that may be there, but you should never forget the basic principle that the chair doesn't belong to you. You know, that's the basic principle that you should keep in mind. And so he was explaining that the devotees act upon that principle. You know, and he told this story, which is an interesting story to tell lawyers, that some centuries ago, I think it was, there was a very nice devotee of Krishna. The Mohammedans were ruling, and he was the treasurer, the accountant, and he was siphoning off the money, and he actually built a nice temple for Krishna. And what happened was that the Muslim ruler caught him and threw him in jail and was going to punish him, you know, very severely. And then at night, that Muslim ruler had a dream that Krishna came to him and said, you know, please, two beautiful boys, actually, Krishna and Balaram, they both appeared. And they said, please don't punish my devotee. And the Muslim ruler in his dream said, yes, but they have stolen my money. So Krishna put down a couple of big bags of money. He says, here's your money bag. Now please don't punish my devotee like that. So when the Muslim ruler woke up, the bags of money were actually there. And he understood, oh, you know, these are great devotees of the Lord. And then he went to the devotee and he said, you can, whatever money you have taken, you know, then you can use that as you please, and you can also have this and something like that. So he gave him that money as well. So, you know, as I said, it's an interesting story to tell lawyers. But he's expressing the point that, you know, what happens is that the lawyers and most politicians, you know, their excuse is that we have to run society, and, you know, people will, you know, argue over facility, and, you know, they will, so therefore we have to make laws. But Prabhupada's point is that in the name of running society and making your laws, you can't forget this principle that everything belongs to God. And he got back to the flower incident. He said, you know, therefore in a God-conscious country, previously if a devotee went to someone's house and said, can I have some of those beautiful flowers so I can worship the Lord, the person would say yes immediately. Like that. There would be no problem. And, you know, so Srila Prabhupada is expecting that, you know, society be managed in such a way that they never forget this principle, this truth, reality. Otherwise, if they forget the reality that everything belongs to God, you know, they've lost the principle of truthfulness even in the legal system. As soon as you lose the principle of what is reality, how can you then say that your legal or political system is based upon truth? It's based upon a falsehood. That honour among thieves, as they say. So, you know, Srila Prabhupada's position is that, you know, society should come up to the standard of the devotees. Actually, not, you know, of the standard of the Bhagavatam, not that the devotees should forget the ultimate truth that everything belongs to the Supreme Lord and just gradually accept the falsehood that, you know, everything belongs to, you know, this ruler, that ruler. Therefore, our philosophy is that, you know, basically in the time of Maharaj Pricket, the world was one state. You know, there were certainly different provinces and different kings, but actually the world was one state, you know, one Krishna conscious ruler, one God, and one activity, which is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And, you know, therefore, again, Srila Prabhupada gives the example of the United Nations, that when the people from the United Nations, they go there, but there's no question that they'll ever be successful, because actually, you know, when someone goes there from Africa or England, those persons are not thinking of the benefit of the whole world. They're actually thinking, I'm going to this United Nations, you know, meeting, and I'm going to get what's beneficial for, you know, Africa, or, you know, the Japanese may go there and, you know, in the name of science, they want to do some whaling. It's not in the benefit of the world, you know, or, you know, it's in the benefit of, you know, their own nation. Each country, America goes there and they're doing things, you know, what's the benefit, you know, for oil and petrol and resources, like that. So they're actually going there with their own selfish interest, according to this belongs to us, and, you know, if we can get more, you know, from here and there, then it, so it's this selfish interest. It's only when they have that sense of God consciousness that everything actually belongs to the Supreme Lord, can they actually have a proper United Nations. Okay. So, you know, and of course, more and more, you know, with the flower incident, you know, devotees always, previously, you know, we very enthusiastically just followed that policy, you know, everything belongs to Krishna. You know, so, and, you know, but, you know, with the expectation that, you know, we keep acting on that principle and everyone will gradually, you know, come our way, which is what Prabhupada wants. But of course one has to be very, very careful, you know, to, Prabhupada doesn't expect that devotees should disregard, you know, the laws of the land. You know, that's foolishness. But it's not that, although devotees should not disregard, you know, the laws of society, of the country that they live in, still, you know, they should not gradually accept the same falsehood upon which those laws may be based. You know, and they should always be attempting to, in their actions, to gradually bring people to you know, a point of Krishna consciousness, as Srila Prabhupada has taught us in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Any questions on that point? Yeah.
Is this the thing with the United Nations, when they go with their own individual things? I think this, and the devotees need to keep that in mind as well when you're doing Krishna service, because it's to do with the whole, not just their own individual advancement and stuff. So how, what effect is what I'm doing for the whole?
Your devotees also, in a temple, we also maintain that same principle that everything belongs to God. It's the same principle, whether it's in society or, because that's the reality, that everything, including the temple, you know, the zone, everything belongs to God. And because it belongs to God, then how is it managed? You know, it's managed in this sense that when everything belongs to God, then we utilize whatever resources there are for the benefit of all living entities in a way that pleases the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, For instance, if we're talking on an international scale, if in one particular country they're facing some famine, or there's no food, then the other countries where there is plenty, they would just produce. If they have the proper temperatures in the field, they will produce sufficient food for those countries who are having some difficulty. In this way, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that in this world, there is no lack of anything except a lack of Krishna consciousness. Many people in this world go without food, go without shelter, go without, the basics, actually a huge proportion of the planet. And it is due to this principle, a lack of Krishna consciousness, that instead of sharing the facility, one country always tries to maintain superiority and to enjoy facilities in a very greedy, selfish way, which is certainly not pleasing to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in the temple, we also have, a similar situation that, you can have different examples that, for instance, in the kitchen, we know that, the devotees are, on most days, certain hours of the day, they're cooking prasadam for, one of the offerings or a feast or a meal. Now, if a devotee says, well, everything belongs to God, and, I need a bit of a space to do my art, and they set up in the kitchen, some lovely benches here, stainless steel, easy to wash. Everything belongs to God, we'll share it like that. Because some activities are, whatever keeps the best momentum for preaching Krishna consciousness is Srila Prabhupada's formula, which he learned from his spiritual master. That is the best way that facility is allocated according to that principle that everything belongs to God, but it belongs to God and should be utilized in a way that is most pleasing to the Supreme Lord. Therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he became disappointed that his disciples, just very, when they got that very opulent temple, they were squabbling amongst themselves for particular rooms and particular facility for their own purposes, which he considered was a great detriment to the preaching. So it was not pleasing to the spiritual master and therefore not pleasing to the Supreme Lord. But, in their minds, everything belongs to God, so I'm a devotee, representing God, let me, use it this way. So it is that principle brought down the Gaudiya Math. That when, facility is not actually used, particularly for the preaching, and therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave Srila Prabhupada the instruction that whenever you get money, print books. Because, keep that preaching going, especially with the Brihat Madanga, very, very effective form of preaching. And, Prabhupada's, if you see, when Srila Prabhupada was here, as much money come in, it was just spent on preaching immediately. Certainly, it was, preaching also means establishing temples. But, in Kali Yuga, kirtan is the most important element of devotional service. Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalona, Stephen, Stephen, Kitir, and Yita. The holy name. Kirtan. And the book distribution is the big madanga. That is also kirtan. So that is the main principle. And therefore sometimes Srila Prabhupada mentions that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't establish temples himself, but preached the holy name and the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, you know, that is foremost. Therefore Prabhupada says books are the essence. But preaching is the essence, books are the basis. Purity is the force and utility is the principle. So, you know, when that mood is there, then all devotees can have a conception, everything belongs to God. No one can claim proprietorship. But, you know, whatever it facilitates the preaching in the most effective way, that is how we allocate and share facility. That same, so you know, to answer your question, it's the same principle. Therefore, the more we practice that and fix ourselves in that consciousness, the more that we can educate the general society how to do that. And of course, when the Gaudiya Math collapsed because a lack of that principle, it. How is it possible that the Gaudiya Math could actually, they couldn't help themselves, let alone help society? So, you know, these principles begin in the temple or in the heart of the devotee, you know, because the grihasthas who, you know, live in their homes are also devotees. Their homes are temples. It begins, you know, in the devotees' lives, and from there it expands, you know, they can demonstrate that to others. Any other questions on that point? Yeah.
Can we conclude that the ultimate truth of this Krishna consciousness, this conversation, and that the vehicle for that is the text that we've been given by previously shared by Guru Sahib?
Yes, yeah, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the. The religious principles and knowledge reside within the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, after Krishna left the planet. So that is the first principle of truth that Srila Satsarup Maharaj you know, draws from this chapter. The second principle is that one should not be a hypocrite. You know, that is another aspect, you know, of truth. That he says, and Prabhupada describes that here, that he says, to give an example, that if a Brahmana is not truthful, all his claims as a Brahmana at once become null and void. If a sannyasi is illicitly connected with women, all his claims as a sannyasi at once become false. So, you know, in the same way that one cannot be a sannyasi, you know, it's a false position if he's illicitly connected with women. Similarly, if one is not truthful as a brahmana, their claims, all their claims as a brahmana is once become null and void. It's a false position, despite so many other activities. Truthfulness. Here, again, Srila Prabhupada pointing out, is the very pillar of religion, you know, concerning our understanding of reality, you know, on the whole, you know, how everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but also in how we apply ourselves to religious principles as a Brahmana, a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, or a Sudra. Now, here, we see that how did Kali enter? Kali entered by first through the Brahmanas. Because Prabhupada gives the example that, you know, in a fight, if you want to bring someone down, you go for the head, you know, you get a couple of good ones in the head, bang, they'll go down. So in this way, you know, the whole body collapses. This is how Kali entered, through the Brahmanas, because once the Brahminicals become hypocritical or lose a sense of truth and reality, They're advising the Brahmin, the Kshatriyas. And therefore the Kshatriyas fall. The Kshatriyas are guiding the Vaishyas. The Vaishyas fall. And the Vaishyas are guiding the Sudras. Like this. See, from the top. So this is how Kali entered. Therefore, this movement especially is meant for creating Brahmanas. Because by maintaining this leg of religion of truthfulness, by creating Brahmanas, it supports the essential principle of religion and reality. And by supporting truthfulness, it is then possible to re-establish the other three legs of religion. Austerity, because then the Brahmanas would teach no intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex, you know, no meat eating, and by following these principles, people give society in general, give 50% of all their income. Let's have big festival. Let's have Moomba should become where hundreds of thousands of people turn out. It should be a big Sankirtan festival, and the governments and the people in their homes are just ploughing, hundreds of thousands of dollars. We have a big feast, nice curd sabjis of the Krishna, and gulab jamuns, and chanting and dancing and Rath Yatra, fully supported by the government. Then, gold, which is... Gold is one of the things which destroys truthfulness because it's a false currency. The proper currency is to protect cows. That is a proper basis of economic development, is to protect cows and bulls. But if the basis of economics becomes gold, it's a false... then they produce money which has no proper value with the gold. The proper economic basis is protection of cows. So as soon as they go to a gold-based currency, falsity is the influence of Kali entering. And also gambling or any speculative type of... Therefore, instead of performing the activities according to the Varnashram, the Kshatriyas have certain duties to do, Brahmanas have certain duties, Vaishyas have certain duties, Sudras have certain duties. If they perform other duties, that's speculative. It's the same as gambling. It's the same. So that gambling and speculative activity, that is the other principle which destroys truth. In this way, by creating a society of Brahmanas that protects cows and bulls, and maintains, particularly the sense of reality that everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and not being hypocritical in one's, service to the Lord, but actually trying to please Him, not just externally, not duplicitously, that becomes the basis of establishing all the four legs of religion in the age of Kali. And therefore, it is predicted that if we follow that formula as given in this chapter, that there will be 10,000 years, the golden age of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, based on those principles. Shri Harinam Ki Jai. So I just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. In this class, I touched upon a few points that Satsarupa Maharaj, and just the first few pages, but it's such a wonderful book. Very nice. The truthfulness, the last leg of religion, if you get a chance to read it. Yeah. Always been one of my favourite authors amongst the Vaishnavas. Yeah.
Just explain gold is a false currency?
Yeah, because gold in itself has a tendency to make people somewhat greedy, and when one has accumulates a lot of gold, persons like to then spend it on things like prostitution, intoxication, you know, meat eating, you know, and it invokes criminal behaviour, because you know that where that wealth is. And you know, so it tends to attract those other things. That's one thing. The other thing is that what happens is countries have a certain amount of gold, and then according to the amount of gold or wealth they have in gold, they will then print money to that equal value. But what each country does is they print money far in excess of the value of the gold they have. That's inflation. And therefore, the money that people have, you know, actually is not really wealth. In other words, the government says, so if you have a note, the government says, oh, you have $100 in your hand. And you think, oh, you know, well. And then the next day they say, oh, no, you only have $1. That same note, that same $100 note, is really just $1. You know. So it can, there's no real value. It's a false value. You know. You can be deceived, you know, very easily. So, it's based upon where the governments actually deceive the populations and other countries about their actual wealth. It's based upon an untruth, which is always the influence of Kali. Kali personified, you know, is based upon this, attempt to destroy religious principles and reality and truthfulness. Mm.
An example of this main thing is the recent crisis in America, where they basically all they did was they just went down with a check to the counter, deposited their own check in, said, okay, it's all right to pay now. They didn't actually have any more money.
Yeah.
They've just produced the next extra billions of dollars to pay their debts. They're so far in the red they can't produce any more money, but they've produced it, so it's just paper money. Yeah. It has no real value.
It's caused a lot of trouble. You know, even in places like, Saudi, you know, places where they have, you know, in those desert countries, they have, you know, multi-billion, you know, dollars.
Yeah.
They've also crashed, you know, because there's a false, illusory sense of wealth that people have. You know, it's like this. It's like, say you have, six people, you've got six buckets, you know, and in each bucket you've got, you tell them they've got a whole bucket of, apples, but some are actually empty and some only have this, and only one of them's got, you know, a bucket. So, you know, you can pass them around and everyone's sort of quite happy, you know, that they've got them. But it comes to a point where you actually got to eat. And, you know, at that stage, where it comes to the practicalities, you realise, well, oh, I've got an empty bucket, which is good as long as I wasn't hungry. So a false economy is like that. It's sort of a good, but it comes to a point of reality where, you know, all of a sudden, you know, it means nothing. And, whereas Vedic culture based upon cow protection, it means you always have food, you always have clothing, the land, the water, the air, the living entities are always looked after, you know, the earth is always producing in abundance because the Supreme Lord is pleased, like that. So, you know, it's not a false wealth, you know, what you have, you know, is there, tangibly there, you know. And, you know, when you want to eat, you eat. This is what happened to people in the world. This is why the economy crashed, because there's an illusion that they're very wealthy. You are so wealthy, buy this big house, buy this big mansion, you are so wealthy. You have so much wealth. You know, but when the reality came, they actually didn't have anything to purchase that house, and therefore the houses have been then taken off them. It's like that, you know. So now they can't live in the house. So it's an illusory state. And what happens, at some point reality kicks in. You know, like the example of the bucket. At some point you've got to eat, you've got to have something yet in the bucket to eat. And when that reality kicks in, you know, then it becomes apparent, I've got nothing. Until that point, you know, you can think what you want to think. That. So, you know, it's false.
Well, one country the other day caused a big fall on the market because they decided they're going to take savings out of people's things to make up the shortfall. So they're taking 10% of everybody's money to make up the shortfall in this little country. But that caused a big wave around the world because they realised this happened there, if it go. So the stock market just went down the other day dramatically. They made money and just dropped because all these other countries, they'll do the same thing.
That's right. There's a lot of cheating and greed. Yeah. That's right. Now, you had a question?
No, that was pretty
good. That was pretty, yeah, okay. Well, any other questions? Sorry, all good, should have probably.